This is Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. An issue that seems to come up every year is education funding. It's true again this year. There are at least two plans, a task force, a lawsuit. We're going to see if our education desk reporter, Dusty Rhodes, can help us make sense of it. Dusty, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What are you keeping your eye on this spring?
Well, one of the most promising things right now is House Bill 2808, which was filed by State Representative Will Davis. He's a Democrat from Homewood, but three Republicans have already signed on as co-sponsors. In fact, Representative Bob Pritchard, he's from Hinckley, is one of the chief co-sponsors. Linda Chapalavia is the other. So right there, you get a sense there's pretty broad support. It passed out of committee almost unanimously. It was a 15-1 vote, and that just stunned people who've been watching this issue a lot longer than I have.
So I feel like any time I hear a story about education funding, there's a pretty good chance that State Senator Andy Menar's name is going to come up in the context of that story. He's got his own education plan this spring.
This is his fourth one. Now, Senator Jason Berrickman, a Republican who has also filed education funding legislation in the past, he would jump in and correct me and say that Menar's plan is not a bill. It's an amendment to Senate Bill 1, which was basically a shell bill waiting to be filled. Okay, just so we've got all our I's dotted and
procedural
T's crossed.
Check, yes.
Yes. I almost said my I's were crossed and my T's are dotted. But anyway, you know, they've worked together on this before. I kind of think of them as Batman and Robin. But the agreement that they had this session, it fell apart when the grand bargain fell apart. The bargainers, as I like to call them, had reserved the title Senate Bill 1 for education funding to show how important this issue is. You know, that's a series of interlocking bills. The grand bargain is like a jigsaw puzzle, and these are all or nothing. And so when the Republicans decided not to vote for that package, the bargain got put on hold. And at that point, Menar went ahead and filed Amendment 1 to Senate Bill 1. And it didn't exactly line up with what he and Berrickman had agreed to.
I mean, they had worked together. This had been a bipartisan thing up until this point.
Right. And they had some kind of agreement. I don't know exactly the parameters of it. But now Menar has filed Amendment 3 to this bill. And it happens to be exactly the same as Davis's House Bill 2808.
Okay, so if you're keeping track at home, we have now formerly competing plans. Now they seem to be pulling in the same direction. I mean, if the House bill gets to the Senate, is Menar going to support this?
I think absolutely yes. He told me that 2808 is actually the language that he and Berrickman first started their negotiations on. So it seems like it's something he can live with. And I think at this point, the man just wants the formula changed.
Okay, so that's kind of what's at the heart of this here. Let's move beyond these procedural discussions and say, what does this actually do? Does this actually achieve the goal that everybody says they want, which is a more equitable school funding system here in Illinois?
It actually would, eventually.
I say today or?
No, probably not in my lifetime, but I'm old. So what it does is freeze in place the funding that every district gets right now, so nobody loses any money. That actually gives it a chance to pass because it's got to hold harmless. And Menar's efforts in the past have failed because some districts were going to lose a little bit of state aid. But the equity part of it doesn't really kick in until there are new dollars, which I hear are pretty scarce around here. but the new dollars would be fed through this new formula.
So there was an old joke that with the old school formula, there were only like four people who understood it, and they were not allowed to fly together on a plane. So would you like to take a crack at explaining the new formula? I'm almost afraid to ask.
Well, you're right to be scared because the current formula is always criticized as being super complicated, and this one would be even more complicated, but I can kind of try. It's called evidence-based model, and I did a story yesterday where I compared it to a recipe for how to cook up a good school. It starts with a list of ingredients, 27 in all. Don't worry, I'm not going to list them.
This is not Rachel Ray's 30-minute school funding meals.
This is not a microwavable. This is more of a crock pot thing. It's got things like, you know, lower student-teacher ratios, full-day kindergarten, computers. It's nothing that you haven't heard of before or couldn't come up with yourself, except for maybe instructional coaches. Those are basically teachers to teach the teachers. So they base it on the demographics of your school district, and the state board would figure out how much of each ingredient your school needs and the cost of providing that many teachers, computers, coaches, whatever. And that sum, S-U-M, would be your adequacy target. Are you with me so far?
Yeah. Okay.
Are you awake over there? Okay. And then they would look at how much local support you can get through reasonable property taxes. There's actually something built in there to make sure you're not overtaxing. And then they subtract that from your adequacy target. And so districts who cannot get close to their target, they're called tier one. Districts that are actually over their target, wealthy districts, and there are some, they're called tier four. And then in between are all the others. So 99 cents of every new dollar, you know, assuming there ever is such a thing, would go into tiers one and two. Tiers three and four would share that remaining penny.
So wait, if they're only fighting for a penny, is that even fair? Is this going to have, you know, legislators who have those districts that are going to be tier three and four, are they going to support this sort of thing?
I don't know. And the commission, the funding commission that met for 6 months, some of them said, wow, I don't know. This just doesn't sound right. But you have to keep in mind, this is only the new money. They still get to keep the money that they're currently getting, which is no matter how rich a district is. And we've got a district that's spending more than $30,000 per year per child. Think about that. The state still gives them about $200 per child. That will continue. So they'll always get that. And then they'll get a little piece of this penny, too.
All right. So I'm going to ask you to put on your prediction cap. Is this going to go anywhere?
I will tell you there are signs that say yes and signs that say no. Among the no signs, there's yet another education funding task force. I know. It's painful in the House. Why do we need another one? There's not a reason unless it's to be a speed bump or a sinkhole. And coincidentally, about the same time that this new task force was formed, the Illinois Policy Institute put out a report saying that the evidence-based model doesn't work and what's really needed is pension reform. I'm not sure what that signals, you might know, but it does give people who want to vote against it something that they can point to.
Well, you said, though, that there are also signs pointing to yes here.
Okay, right. So the bipartisan vote on Will Davis's bill, that's a really good sign. There was a lawsuit recently filed by Thomas Gagin, Chicago labor lawyer, on behalf of 17 downstate school districts. And that could inspire some movement because I think lawmakers would rather come up with their own solution than be told what to do by an attorney or a judge. Another good sign is there's a new coalition of a whole bunch of advocacy groups supporting Davis's bill. Everybody from the School Management Alliance to more grassroots kinds of organizations. But one thing I should clarify is that Davis's bill is not soup yet. He still needs to amend it to address the poverty concentration. That's a key issue.
So is this like going to be a percentage of poor kids in a school district, or how do they determine whether a district is poor enough to qualify?
Well, that they're trying to agree on an exact tipping point. But basically, low-income kids just simply live with the kind of stress that makes learning more difficult, and they can't help it, but they bring that stress into the school with them. So schools with a preponderance of low-income kids need some extra help. So Davis is trying to figure out the right way to work that into the bill.
All right. Well, we will have you back to once this starts moving further. Thanks for talking to me today, Dusty.
Thank you.
Dusty Rhodes is NPR Illinois' Education Desk reporter. I'm Brian Mackey.